Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Time to Talk is hosted by me, Alex Holmes. This podcast is an exploration in what it means to be us, what is keeping our lives afloat at the moment, how are we treating ourselves with compassion, what is on our hearts, and what does it mean to be human. This week I'm speaking to Mels Owusu. Mels is a person I was so keen to speak to. Mels is the founder of Free Black Uni, an initiative that believes education should be the most freeing and liberating experience one can partake in. At present, this is too often not the case. They see black students across the world entering an education system that is deeply flawed and even violent in its approach to blackness and other intersections. The vision of the project is two-tiered, and they want to encourage the development of radical, imaginative, and transformative knowledge that can truly change the world, and create a space where the healing and well-being of black folk lies at the heart of the educational experience. I discuss with Mels what their life is like going from margins to center, and the experiences of the transmasculine in culture, academia and society, and how we move forward as futurists to create a world that is inclusive to all. I loved having this conversation with Mels, and I hope that you too will have the same feelings of positivity and happiness that I had once I finished getting through this. So without further ado, let's get into it. Welcome to the show again. It's a pleasure to have you here. I want to tell people about you and who you are, what you do, why you do it. Who is Mels?
Oh, a big question. Mels is, I am. I guess I'm a trans masculine / non-binary academic, writer, activist, person, like deeply concerned with social justice, I guess, and black liberation in a nutshell.
That's very, very concise. I love that. So let's talk about, you know, just to start off with, I'm really interested in your work with Free Black Uni. Before we get into Free Black Uni, I understand you're doing a PhD right now and you're, you know, navigating that. Let's dig into that a little bit. So what is it that you're researching, and what led you to do that research?
So at the moment I am studying in the School of Sociology at Cambridge. I'm looking at my project is called The Right to Imagine Alternative Worlds, The Erotic, The Sacred, and The Speculative, or something along those lines, essentially. And so I'm looking at how we can engage in that kind of non-rationalist modes of knowledge production, and those non-rationalist knowledge production modes being like the feeling of the erotic, the sacred, meaning spirituality, and the speculative, meaning kind of science fiction modes of kind of creating reality. And looking at how these kind of like non-rationalist routes to knowledge production can actually take us further into liberation. And what kind of led me to to kind of undertaking this project is the fact that I often think like so much of the world is just like grounded in like, I guess, colonial thought, innit? And like this colonial scientific mode of how we can know. And I'm really interested like in spirituality, as we were talking about before, and just like the feeling self, and like not into this kind of hyper masculinist mode of knowledge production that has been kind of forwarded by white men in the West. And so my project is really trying to look at how we can have other modes of knowledge production and how that kind of changes our perception of the possibilities of social change. And that's because like I feel that fear is kind of grounded within this kind of rationalist way of thinking. And we often like limit ourselves when we think about anything, but I'm particularly focusing on when we think about Black liberation, because it's like, oh, that's not possible. Oh, we can't do that because of X, Y, and Z. Do you know what I mean? But my project wants to look at how we can kind of navigate those fears, completely kind of disregard them, and just start imagining beyond.
Imagining beyond. I think that's something that we are kind of, we're becoming a lot more forward looking. I think that there's going to be a lot, the conversations we're having are about how can we envisage something for the next. And I found that, I mean, I've just finished reading Grayson Perry's The Descent of Man. I don't know if you've heard of that before, but it was very interesting because he kind of like, he puts something pretty simple. He's just like, you know, if you, when we look at, you know, the future, I think a lot of men don't necessarily look to the future to be a man or with masculinity in that space. It's like looking forward is not necessarily something that we have been able to do. He postulates that like women, people who identify as such, have always been forward thinking. How can women's rights change? How can women be treated better in the future? And you know, how can all of this stuff happen? Whereas a lot of people who are, you know, as men, quote unquote, they don't have that. And it was really interesting just to look at that. So you understanding what you said in the research project, I think that's going to open a lot of doors, because, and a lot of conversation, because I think that we need to start thinking of a new space and of a new world, right?
Literally of a new world.
Yeah, because the conversation like what we've, that we've been having, especially since COVID, has seriously deconstructed all the stuff. It's literally being dismantled.
Word. And I think that there's like a ideas drought, essentially, is what I've called it for a few years, in a sense that there's a lot of activity in it, in like activist spaces, but it's often like reactive to like, oh, the state is doing this, so we need to stop the state doing this. Like the state is killing us, so we need to stop the state killing us. Or the state is kind of taking away like our rights or like our benefit, etc., in it. And like, I've been involved in activism like that. And I think activism like that, like it's the lifeblood of activism. It's incredibly important. But we can, I believe anyway, that we can sometimes focus so much on like how to stop the state doing what it's doing, that we don't have enough time, don't have the luxury of dreaming up new worlds outside of like what we need to kind of control within the state, because we're so like, the state, it's a tactic, innit? They inundate us with just trying to keep our people alive, like trying to allow us to just live a peaceful life. And in all of that struggle, in all of that work, it means that we just don't have that luxury to imagine beyond. And that's why like I created the Free Black Uni, to try and create a space in which people are given that luxury to imagine beyond, and utilizing that as a form of like radical activist work and a radical praxis.
So can I break down what Free Black Uni is? When people go to the website or go to the space, what are they going to encounter?
So Free Black Uni is a project that is looking at how to kind of like not even decolonize education, like get education out of a colonial space and like for the purpose of like Black liberation, essentially. And so when people encounter the space, they'll encounter like events, lectures, and so on that are concerned with like many facets of like Black liberation, but not just in like a kind of academic sense. And so we'll have things that are kind of like quote unquote academic, but also like things that are spiritualist, things that are holistic, things that are about health, things that are about movement, things that are about like an embodied like Black liberatory praxis, essentially. And so at the moment, we're in like the building phases of trying to like create an organization that has like deep roots, so it doesn't just kind of dissipate as we've seen too many like Black organizations do. And yeah, gonna be having a big relaunch in 2022, God willing. And amazing. Yeah, everyone can interact with it from there.
I was gonna ask, who is it for?
Is it for? It's primarily for the Black community all over the world. And everybody else can kind of, it's kind of one of them, I was going to say a simile, but I don't know if I should say it, but like, if we're eating at the table, like all the Black people are eating at the table, yeah, and then obviously everyone else can get the crumbs off the table that we're eating at, essentially. And that's the kind of logic.
okay. And I think this idea of like the table is really interesting. I think that, you know, the idea of community and bringing people together and sitting down and really kind of digesting what is being kind of given to us. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't necessarily think it's, a lot of this stuff is accessible. You know, I'm consistently reading something or bringing myself to some, like learning something new. And for some people, it's just difficult and challenging. Yeah. And I think that a lot has been kept away from us.
Specifically
as Black people, a lot has been kept away from us, and I think the idea of kind of us growing, and as we age and grow up, we then start to delve into more knowledge and trying to figure out like ourselves. And I think there was this whole quote about, you know, I think Toni Morrison must have said something like, you know, no one ever knows when you become Black or when you become white. It's just that you start to then go down this path of really trying to understand it, and especially in the Black experience anyway, you have to go and understand what that looks like.
And like, I just think that so much, like you were saying, like so much is kept away from us, and that is also what inspired like the Free Black Uni, because when I was studying for my undergrad, like I studied philosophy and politics, and like I'm just interested in like the kind of what makes the world, and what are the thought processes, what are the thought systems that kind of undergird the kind of every action that we kind of take in the world, as opposed to like the actions themselves. And I was reading stuff, I was like, everybody should have access to this. Why does everyone not know this? But it's kind of like this massive gatekeeping of knowledge. And the way it's done as well is that it's written in such an inaccessible way. But when you just break down the philosophies and theories, it's so simple that everybody should be able to understand it. And like my background from coming, like going to a school in which like, I believe I was the only like student to go to like a Russell Group University from like my entire school, innit? And I was even telling a friend like the other day that like more people in that school have been incarcerated than went to like Russell Group Universities, you feel me? And I'm just like, it wasn't that these people are any less intelligent or any less worthy or any less whatever. It's literally just the system messing us up. And I feel like people that went to schools like me, people that are like incarcerated, people that are like within communities like how I've grown up, should have access to this knowledge, because this I find knowledge in and of itself, and like the idea of being like a knowledge creator and a knowledge producer, which I feel like everybody is, but not everybody has the language to understand how to kind of navigate that space, is like the most freeing and liberating thing like ever. And so that's why I want to make sure that the masses have access to like this kind of like liberatory education.
Who was one of the groundbreaking discoveries that you found that kind of really like shook your world? And I know there's probably many, but what kind of, if you think about back at a time, like for me, it was Song of Solomon. Like when I started, I think that was Toni Morrison's, and then I started delving into James Baldwin, Giovanni's Room, and then, you know what I mean, like I was really delving into that, and that really just, it shook my whole world open, it broke me open. What was one of yours? or one.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was like the entire body of Black feminist thought. but that's pretty broad. But that's even definitely then, like, sorry.
Yeah, even then, yeah.
So that's pretty broad. But then the other thing that came to my mind was the cogito, like Descartes' cogito, I think therefore I am. And like I was like, this just don't make no sense. I just recognizing how much that impacts society as like we're all like rationalist, mind-driven, intellect-driven like beings. And I was like, that just erases so much of like the human experience. And so that's why like my work is focused on what happens beyond like us being only functional if we're thinking, isn't it? And only worthy if we're thinking. So yeah.
So it's interesting that you brought up Descartes and stuff. Waste, because man. I remember I was speaking to Kehinde Andrews and he's kind of just like really he's just dashed all them Western philosophers in the bin, really and truly.
That's where they need to be.
I think therefore I am. I remember studying that at A level. And I don't really think I understood what was actually being said there. But reading, I think Audre Lorde commented on that. And I cannot remember the article it was in or the book. I just somehow remember. Yeah. Do you know it?
Yeah, it might be Poetry Is Not a Luxury, in which it says, I feel, therefore, I can be free.
There we go. And once I read that, I was like, actually, when we think about the Western idea of being, it's not even about being. It's about saying, it's about really kind of living in the headspace and, you know, ignoring the body's trauma, the body's feelings of things and whatnot, which allowed them to then go forth and enact the cruelties that they enacted across the world. And I think just that one piece of unlocking kind of just made me just recognize that the way the world that we live in, and we see it today, especially with COVID, and we see it in that space, like people, you know, everything has to be a logical response. But what about what you are feeling about this moment? You know, our leader, quote unquote, our leader was literally bedridden in the ting with the virus, but yet he's out here talking about nonsense and, you know, and doing foolishness. So, you know, I think that what you're doing is amazing, and we need to open up these conversations a lot more because there's so much there. And you know, and as like people of the African diaspora, we are feelers, like we
inherently feel. Spiritual beings.
There we go. And music, food, fashion, like feeling, like we put feeling and we put love and we put a lot of that stuff into it. What? And for us to kind of come back and say, well, our thoughts are the only thing that keeps us, it's a bit like but our hearts though,
literally, and it's like this idea of the thought being the only faculty that makes you human as well, which again is like another way of dehumanizing people that didn't have that as that their first navigation of like being.
There we go. So that's Free Black Uni. I'm interested. I'm looking forward to the relaunch next year.
Soon come. So am I.
I wanted to get your perspective on what masculinity means to you. And because you know what? I'm so exhausted by just the blatant disregards that masculinity has kind of the perspective of masculinity that we have today and the kind of people that are enacting it and in reinforcing particular elements of it. I'm exhausted by a lot of it, but I'm interested to hear what your perspective is, and obviously I'll share mine thereafter, but I'm interested.
Yeah, no, it's just something I think about often, of course, because of like my transition into masculinity. Like, it's not something I can't think about. And so it's so complex, isn't it? It's like, where do I even begin? Like, I grew up believing to an extent that masculinity like equaled harm, innit? And there's no other way to be masculine but than to be harmful. And that's because like I grew up in a domestic violence environment, when I presented, like, as a woman, like, I experienced things that, like, women experience at the hands of men. And all I'd been, those were the only, like, masculine people that I'd known in my life, and the only masculine figures. And I wasn't seeing anybody that was expressing masculinity in a way that wasn't harmful. And so then I come to be like, okay, like, I need to identify, like, with myself, and I don't identify with this body. I don't identify, like, with this identity and so on. But then I'm like, raw, if I transition, then that means that I become de facto harm. And I remember, like, experiences of, like, where there's no danger, like, present, feeling an incredible level of, like, fear when I'm in spaces, like, with a particular, with men that might reflect people that have caused me harm, like, in the past. Mm-hmm. And having to navigate the idea that I then might too cause other people the same kind of fear or, like, trauma or whatever it may be when I'm just trying to live my life, you feel me? And so, honestly, like, it sent me into the biggest depression ever. Like, it was so difficult to try and navigate, because I'm like, I can't be here if I'm forced to live as a woman. I can't be here if I have to then become essentially the men that have hurt me. And so, like, where does that leave me, innit? And so it just took a long period of, like, recognizing, like, my pain, and, like, it's an ongoing thing, innit? And just trying to heal from, like, the things that have happened to me in the past, the things that I've experienced, and also trying to interact with as many, like, men as possible that aren't, like, that aren't producing harm, that aren't taking on, like, these toxic masculinist kind of traits. And as well, like, surround myself with, like, women or non-binary people as well, who don't just see masculinity as harm, who have also done that work. And I think that it's really important, because I feel like there's often this idea that it's just men that need to do the work of unlearning, like, toxic masculinity, or that need to do the work of unlearning, like, the tropes of masculinity. But there, it's a collective thing, in it, because, like, the same way that, like, obviously not the same way, but in, like, harmful ways, women can also, like, perpetuate ideas of, like, men as, like, simply harm, and it's not good for anyone, innit? And I just think that we all need to heal, essentially. And as a trans masculine person, I recognize that my healing from, like, even though it's not done, it's a, like I said, it's an ongoing process, but, like, I then didn't have the luxury, well, I'll call it a luxury, of, like, just projecting my pain onto men, because when I transitioned, I had to understand it within myself, otherwise I'd project it onto myself. And I recognized that prior to that, I was just projecting all of the pain that I'd experienced onto men as, like, a whole, and that's not good for anybody, you feel me? So, yeah.
Yeah. I love what you've said, everything, and I'm just trying to digest all of that.
Yeah.
Because where you said that, first of all, the projection of that onto men, like, I, like, you know, there are so many things, and, like, I mean, and this is where we kind of connected at the point in our respective points in life, because I was at the point of trying to understand myself as a man, what that looks like, and then forgiving the men around me who had enacted a particular element of harm with regards to whether that be emotional or physical, you know? So understanding that, and then having that conversation with people, and then even that conversation with myself, it's like, it was one thing. But then another thing was just not being able to turn that all inward and kind of start to attack who I was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, consistently questioning, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I being right? Am I being good? Yeah. Am I X, Y, and Z? I don't want to be like that man. I think men are X, Y, and Z and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you start to really kind of put yourself in a space that goes around that. And I think that what you said about, like, you know, it's for all of us to kind of, like, really unlearn a lot of those things. But how important do you think it is for us to be surrounded by many different men who are in the process of wanting to heal. But some people don't even necessarily have the language or the ability to kind of articulate what they need. Because in my kind of, you know, in the kind of in the community that I'm building and the people that I'm around a lot of the time, I look at men and I say, just, I said, what we all have in common is that we are men. Like regardless of, you know, what you were born as, what you identify, you know what I mean? We are, like, if that's where you're at, we're men. Like, what we need to do is understand one another. We need to understand our stories and start to move forward in that. But what do you say to that? Is that something that is too idealistic or...
Yeah, no, definitely not too idealistic. I think it's deeply important. And I think that there's a lot more space that should be made, like, for men to be able to heal. And I don't mean that necessarily, like, spaces themselves. And so as you're talking, like, it's definitely important for men to create spaces in which men can, like, navigate that healing journey together. But then I also do think that, like, just in general society, like, this idea of men healing, like, needs to be seen as something that is, like, encouraged, that is loved, that is, like, appreciated, that is kind of, like, not disparaged, not seen as, like, unmasculine. Like, it's all just, it all just makes no sense to me, to be honest. But I think that, yeah, it can be, like, quite daunting for, like, because it takes away the whole idea of masculinity, innit? And obviously, like, bell hooks writes a lot about it in what's it, The Right to Change, just about how
the will to change,
The will to change, my bad, like how men aren't afforded the kind of space to heal because masculinity is seen as something that doesn't embody, like, this kind of feminine healing principle of, like, this feminine principle of healing, essentially, and how both men and women perpetuate those feeling, those thoughts and feelings onto men in a pursuit for them to be, like, more masculine or masculine enough.
What do you think, when you think of masculinity now, where you're at in 2021, talking to me in this space, what do you think of masculinity now? Like, if you could sum it up in, like, a word or two or a sentence, or two, like, what does, when you think of it now, when you feel it now,
you know what word came to my mind? It's, which is a damn shame, but it was dangerous, but it's not dangerous in the same way as I used to see it. And so whilst I used to see it as dangerous, as in, like, men are gonna hurt me, men have hurt me, men have done X, Y, and Z to me, now it's more dangerous in the sense of, I know how I, on the trajectory of my transition, I know that I'm only going to become more masculine looking, only gonna continue to look like a man, essentially. And that feels scary and dangerous to me, because, like, even at this point in my transition, the differences that I'm seeing in the people that are surrounding me, like, I'm the same person that, like, came through this transition, but obviously I present in a different way, innit? And so, like, the suspicious eyes, the getting followed around shops, like, the getting accused of X, Y, and Z, like, it's a scary and a dangerous thing. And I'm like, how do I now navigate all of this? How do I protect myself in and amidst all of what Black masculinity is seen as?
I've spoken quite a bit about the selective invisibility of Blackness, I guess. Black, you know what I mean? Like, you can be out on the street and obviously just ignored until until you are then seen, and it just becomes this thing where it's like all eyes on you, sort of thing.
What?
And as you said, yeah, I understand where you're going with when you say dangerous to be around, because you don't know how people are going to receive you. You know, you step into spaces, and, you know, I do step into shops and I do step into things and I do think, I need to hurry up and get out of this shop very quickly. So I need to go in. I need to look for what I want. I need to go and get my little juicy fruit thing. And I need to go to the till quick time. Like, I need to go to cashless. Was it cashless? The contactless card machine. Okay. I need to do all of that stuff. I need to do, and then leave. Because I figured to myself, like, I don't want to impose myself on anybody. And then sometimes I step outside the shop and I'm just like, what is that? Mm-hmm. What is me stepping into that space doing to me, you know? Where? Am I a danger? Like, I know I'm not, but are they dangerous to me? Like, absolutely. Like, anything could happen in those spaces. Indeed. So when I think about masculinity, for me, though, I think about tenderness. And I think about kind of, like, having these conversations. And I think about learning from another. Like, I keep saying, I've been saying this to a lot, like, I sit at the foot of my elders, you know what I mean? And I really kind of, like I sit and I listen, but also I hope that the elders can learn from me too. Does that make any sense? Because I think that's how you become elders, you know? You learn from the people that are coming up and whatnot, and you understand that. And I think that's what we kind of need to do more. And that's the environment that I feel like a lot of masculinity, and black masculinity in particular, should be cultivating.
Beautiful. I love that. And I hope that I can get to a place where I can, associate masculinity with just tenderness. And I think, like, the position that I'm in my transition, and just, like, the difference in life that, like, I'm seeing happen, like, as people begin to interact with me in different ways, it's just, like, I haven't learned any of this. Like, there's no rule book. There's no way to figure it out. There's no way to deal with it. Like, and that is what is, like, the scary part in it. But hopefully, as I learn it and as I kind of grow into it more and more, I don't internalize it. And instead, I'm able to kind of, like, have that kind of distinction between, like, what masculinity means to me and what black masculinity may mean to other people who kind of project their shit onto me.
Absolutely. So what was growing up for you like then, if you don't mind having that conversation? What was growing up for you like? And I remember you posted on Instagram once about, you know, of a past you, and you're saying, this is me kind of, like, growing, and I'm here now, and this is where I'm at, and, you know, and you're very transparent with your journey. And very open with where you're at and kind of what you're going through. And what I respect and love about you is that you take the adequate breaks that you need from overexposure to things. I think that's so, that is so important, because we can get so caught up in just everything. And especially when we are going through such emotional experiences ourselves, we can then intertwine that with all of the feelings, especially as people who are, I would imagine, are as empathetic as we are, who are kind of taking on all of these different things. You want to be a part of so much, but you're going through so much. So what was that like growing up for you and your family, and just kind of and reconnecting who you are with who your family didn't necessarily see?
Yeah, I guess it's always just a process, isn't it? And so growing up, just not really identifying with anything and just thinking that everybody else was like that as well. And just, like, being, I almost felt like a, how can I even put it? Just not connected to myself and not connected to my body, not connected to anything, innit? And I was just kind of, like, going through life, doing what I was doing. And just trying to not think about, like, my body, not think about, like, my gender and all of that kind of stuff, just as kind of an act of survival. And I think something that I thought about as well was just how, for me, I don't identify as, like, I was born, like, this gender. Like, I was born, like, non-binary. I was born as a, like, I don't identify with any of that. And I was born as, like, a little black girl. I lived as a little black girl. I then lived as, like, a dark-skinned black woman for a number of years and had those experiences of dark-skinned black womanhood. And then I transitioned, and that's where, well, I'm transitioning, and that's where I'm at right now. And, like, that's really important for me, innit? And that's not often the narrative that's heard, like, within these spaces. And to begin with, I was scared that, like, because I've already had, like, public exposure prior to like transitioning that people are going to have access to like old images of me and whatnot. But then I was like, I just actually have to embrace it. And that embracing was important to me on a similar level of like, I've had those experiences and those are the experiences that make me. Like, you can't divorce like my history. Like I call it like trans people claiming our own genealogies, essentially, like our own like timelines, our own histories. And it is entirely consistent for me to have grown up in that kind of way and then to become this. And it's just, I just grew up differently to other people, essentially, innit? But it was a very difficult challenge, of course, like coming out, like I'm Ghanaian and it's difficult, innit? But at the end of the day, like when it's down to like either I'm gonna live or I'm gonna die, like I had like self-preservation, innit? And I was willing to take whatever came when I came out, innit? If it was like my family just owned me, if I get killed, like whatever it was, I was just like, listen, nothing is worse than like what I'm experiencing right now. And so I have to do this like for myself. And honestly, best decision like I've ever made in my life, like was to begin my transition when I began it and being able to like slowly like step into myself and step into like my power, because I was still doing things like prior to my transition and like everyone probably looked at me like, oh, like you've got it together kind of thing, but I didn't have anything together. Like right now I still don't have everything together, but I wasn't connected to the things that I was doing. Like I was living in like a perpetual state of disassociation, but only now can I actually connect with the things that I'm doing, which means that the things that I can offer the world only become better by virtue of me being able to like live in my truth and be in myself.
Yeah, that is like, you know, it's a very courageous thing. You know, and I think that as Black people, we just have been, I don't like saying things like this because I feel like it takes away our agency, but I feel like it's just on my chest, I'm just gonna say it. But you're like, you know, being robbed of our kind of capacity to own our truths. You know what I mean? To own the stuff, to own the way that we feel, to own the way that we kind of like the way that we are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's a super courageous thing you did, because I think that in order for us to kind of progress forward, we need to feel like we can progress forward
and have these
conversations.
Yeah, and it was just definitely like a difficult thing, but it also taught me so much. Like nothing has taught me as much in life as transitioning has taught me, and all of this stuff that I'm interested in with regards to like building a Free Black Uni, creating these like speculative visions of the future. Like I had to speculate about my own future. Like I had to create and conjure up an idea of myself that kind of pushed against everything that I'd ever been told was possible for me, that I'd ever been told was true, that I've ever been told like was even just okay for me, and just be like, nah, that's who I am and I need to go and chase that. And in the process of chasing that thing, like you have to become fearless. You literally have to become fearless in so many ways. And like, not say like I'm fully fearless, like I still have my fears, I still have my insecurities, I still have my whatnot, but like it's taught me so much to be able to like, even through that fear, to step into that courage and do the things that I feel like are my purpose to do in this world.
For sure. I did want to actually speak to you about mental health and spirituality and spiritual health. So, I mean, I miss Leona's Zodiac Nights, the Astro Mixer. And for those of you who don't know what it is, you probably will never know. It was Liliana Nicole Black. You can find her on Instagram. She's a tarot therapist and amazing all-round person. Love it a bit. So community building she has done has been amazing. But she basically does this social mixer which has astrology at its center and theme. Everybody gets split into teams based on your element of your sun sign, to earth, air, fire and water. One of the first few places that I, you know, Mels and I shared community and space in was at the Astro Mixer. And it's kind of one of those spaces where you didn't have to feel weird for liking astrology, like, you know what I mean? Like, because you knew everybody was there, yeah, and you knew what everybody's vibe was. Everybody was on it. Like, you had the fire signs being fire signs, the water signs being water signs, the earth signs being earth signs, and the air signs being air signs. And it was really interesting watching the Leos fight the Capricorns, and you know, and then like the water signs are sitting there chilling, just kind of like so laid back and relaxed. They were just like, yeah, this is cool, man. We are vibing. But the one thing I really wanted to speak to you about, because obviously it just kind of does hark back around full circle back to your PhD and just the sacred element of what you talk about. And how has spirituality helped you with your mental well-being as well? And I think that people really try to disconnect the two.
Yeah.
Too much of the time, and we don't speak about spirituality enough, yeah, I don't feel. So do you want to speak on that just a little bit, just to see where we go?
Yeah, like, honestly, it saved my life. Like, when I was first contemplating transition, I remember I was in Leeds, like, pretty, like, alone, like, had a couple friends there, but most of my friends had graduated. I had actually started a PhD at Leeds, which I later left, and now obviously I'm doing a PhD elsewhere. But it was like a year of like constant depression, right? And I just couldn't do anything. And that's the year that I got my first tarot deck. And it was inspired because I was taught by Leona, actually, at least that's how Leona and I met, like, years and years ago. Like, she was a seminar leader for me when I was in my final year of uni, and she had started doing like tarot stuff in and around like the city, and just like started doing it on YouTube as well. And so I started watching, and I was like, yo, this is lit. Like, I was loving it, innit? And then I got my first tarot deck. And when you're in a situation where like everybody in the world is telling you to doubt yourself, innit? And that's often what happens, like, to trans people, to trans kids, to anybody contemplating transition. Like, the whole world is telling you that you should doubt yourself. Like, are you sure? Like, you're going to be upset. Like, you're going to regret this. You're going to, like, people say, like, and that's just that's the tip of the iceberg of what people say to you when you're contemplating transition. And the tarot gave me, like, a route to kind of affirming my own truth, essentially. And learning more about the tarot, pulling cards for myself, like when I'm like taking on other people's doubts, or when I'm like questioning myself, like being able to pull those cards and then like get a reflection back to me that affirms me, like from me, but like affirming me in that kind of way, was like honestly so powerful and so necessary at that time. And then from tarot, I just kind of like continued looking at all different roots of spirituality, and I started looking at pre-colonial spiritualities across like the African diaspora, particularly like Candomblé, like Ifa, traditions in Ghana, and just like started learning so much about it, and just being like, listen, like, how could I ever live my life without it? But I grew up in the church, like back in the day, innit?
And so I was gonna ask you.
So I had that kind of like it was interesting. Do you know, church is community, innit? Church was like lit in a sense of the community that it brought. It had like many of like its issues, that my church was actually shut down by the Charity Commission because mismanagement of funds by like the white pastor in this like all black church. But anyway, we won't talk about that. It was bad.
Offline. Church did,
but church did give like a massive sense of community, and it taught me about like prayer. It taught me about spiritual connection, didn't it? It taught me, like, because it was a Pentecostal church as well, wasn't it? It taught me about like spiritual relation, praise and worship, like, do you know what I mean? Like, acknowledging something outside of ourselves but also within ourselves. And so that kind of transition, like, when I left after like my dad passed, actually, when I was 15, I kind of like started moving out of the church, and it just didn't resonate. And as I kind of stepped into like my queerness and then my transness, it just just didn't resonate with me anymore. But recognizing like our traditional like belief systems and like alternative modes of spirituality, like, gave me a new way of like exploring that core element of myself, and it was honestly like the most beautiful thing ever.
Yeah, it's amazing what you say about community, because I've spoken to a lot of people who have inevitably left the church via their feelings of alienation through their sexuality, or through just disagreement. You know, I mean, I've got friends who just like, you know, got kicked out because they had sex. So they were just like, well, boy, this just the end of that thing. But
yeah,
a lot of the time, what has always come back to me, and what I agree with, because I experienced it myself, was that it was praise and worship that always brought me through, like, always, because, you know, coming from a traditional West Indian church, and, like, you know, it was a Pentecostal church in places. I mean, I went up and down. There was a point in life where I was just jumping from church to church, and, like, literally from church to church. Where are you this week? Where are you this Sunday? I'm somewhere in South London. Why am I here? But so jumping from church to church and whatnot, it was always the music that caught me. And it was always that stuff that got me. But it was all but the community aspect of it. A lot of what people said is that they would have their kids, but they would want their kids to be in the church at least, just to grow up in for like the first, whether 10, 15 years of their life, and then they choose what they want to do, because the community that the church provides, you know, some of the lessons that it does teach, they do teach valuable things at times. But also, as you've alluded to, that it's the leadership a lot of the time doesn't necessarily fit the mold of kind of present day life. You know, some people are trying to finesse, and some people are, you know, really trying to lead people astray. So there's various things in that. But I'm always interested, because when it comes to black people, it's like we always have our roots in the church in some way, shape or form. And that's a colonial hangover. But, you know, it just becomes very interesting as to kind of what we think about other elements of spirituality. And because it does teach us very similar things, right?
Us a lot.
What we learn.
Mm-hmm.
So tapping into go on.
Just agreeing, it definitely teaches us a lot. And even things that I kind of take as second nature, okay, I'm gonna fast today. Like, other people would be like, oh, fasting, what's that? Do you get me? But I used it in the Christian church, but now I can also use it for the spirituality that I'm moving into. And it just gives us that sense of otherworldliness that a lot of people don't actually have.
For sure. I do want to know more about the African traditions that you kind of tapped into. If you could, what is the thing that you kind of learned from? Did you say Ifa?
Ifa tradition? Yeah.
What is that, and what did you learn from that?
Yeah, Ifa is the kind of divination system of the Yoruba people. And then it kind of is essentially the root system of a lot of African diasporic traditions. So Candomblé, Candomblé, which is in Brazil, Sintra, which is in Cuba. It also has some roots in voodoo, but voodoo is also from some other parts, I believe, Congo and so on. So I just literally try and find everything that I possibly can and try and alchemize it in. And that's one of the things I think about Christianity. I don't like dogma personally. I believe that there is a united source. We all come from one source. There's just different languages to speak to that source. And so I want to be multilingual in it. I want to be a polyglot in all of these different languages that I kind of connect with source. And so one of the things that I love about Ifa and Candomblé, specifically, because those are the even more so Candomblé. When I visited Brazil, I learned a lot about Candomblé, and I just love the tradition. One of the things about it is that they have deities called Orishas, and a lot of the Orishas are gender neutral, you feel me? It really made me think about how important mythology is in social practices. And even though we place such limited importance on it in common discourses, because we're sex is biological and whatnot, what if the Bible was these people are non-binary? we would then go and look for like a scientific reason to show it. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not as kind of linear as people look at it, innit? And so I kind of like think about what a world would be like if we based it on these alternative like mythologies and belief systems and spiritualities of like Candomblé, where so many of the Orishas are like gender neutral, and like there's even like an Orisha who like lives 6 months of the year as a man, 6 months of the year like as a woman. And like to me that as well kind of like disrupts the linearity of gender, like this idea of like you, if you come in the world as one gender, then you, and then you transition, you have to stay that gender and that's it. Like I don't believe in that, innit? And if you do, like you detransition, and detransition is like the main reason why people are like, oh, don't allow people to transition, innit? But detransitioning may just be part of your journey, what, quote unquote, detransitioning. Like you should be able to navigate and like explore and like bend and create gender however you want to create it. And that's what like the deities within that belief system kind of teach me. Like one specific deity called I've even forgot his name now. Logan Ede.
The name is
Logan Ede. Logan 6 months of the year as a man in the fields in the woods with his dad called Jose, and then 6 months of the year in by the river with their mother Oshun.
Okay. Yeah. That is so dope. I would say to you that there's an episode that me and my friend did a few weeks back, and he has a theory about what God meant when he created Adam and Eve. So I'm gonna send you that episode.
Yeah, send it to me.
And you can let me know what you think.
I will do.
But so yeah, but that's super interesting, and I've always been interested in, because I'm fascinated by what we don't know.
Because mm-hmm. So much.
There's no way that we can confirm a lot of the stuff, because a lot of history has been left to, you know, history. He's just been left to just mine and whatnot, and the efforts put in place to erase those things have been marginally successful, in a sense. So it's actually quite disturbing sometimes to think to myself, like, you know, my understanding of spirituality and where I'm at with what it means and what I understand about, say, past lives and kind of, you know, the soul and soul stories and soul ages and all those different things. I feel those intuitively, but I am given back to the thinking side of stuff, but I'm given ideas that I do not resonate with, but I must take on, because that is what is done, you know. So I think that is something interesting, and I always urge people to just spend their time in their own self-interrogation. And even if it comes down to your own spiritual interrogation, there's sometimes it's great to question things.
Absolutely.
And Mel's will attest to this as the philosophy
and the question everything.
And the doctoral student. Look at you. All right. Thank you so much for joining me on the show, Mel. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Two books that you would suggest for readers to go away with after this episode.
The first book would be Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower, which is like a speculative fiction / science fiction novel. And the other being Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton.
Okay. Why do you choose those?
The first one, because of like how much it taught me about like the power of like imagination, the power of like speculating about the future, and like how we can use literary fiction as a device to kind of engineer social transformation. And Revolutionary Suicide, because like I feel like Huey has so many lessons, and I feel like he's often disregarded, like because obviously he was a very, very imperfect like human. But the power of like Black radicalism, Black revolution, that is embodied in that book and that is embodied in his life is just something that I massively resonated with, and just like reading like his experience of masculinity. And one of the things that like I'm shocked or like saddened that weren't like explored in the book is that Kiwi's journey of healing, because that he was when he was imprisoned, he was like tortured essentially. And so that kind of question about what happens to a person who's like tortured by the state, who doesn't have access to like healing as like a black man. So yeah.
Okay. So that's The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler.
Yeah.
And Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, Mels, it's been a pleasure. Love having you on the show. Like, come back.
100.
You want to come back. And where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. On Instagram at Mels. And emails are always open, like mels.owusu@gmail.com.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah. All right, guys. I'm going to catch you next week. Stay blessed.
Blessings.
You just listened to Mels Owusu. Find their work over at freeblackuni.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next week. Bye.